Broadcasting from the super secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, this is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Stand by. Accessing primary security protocols. Your access has been approved. Welcome to Level 117.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of Level 117 on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Jason Hunt here, along with Maya Aids.
Yodio.
Dan Hanley.
Hello.
Timothy Harvey.
Hello. What was it you just said?
Yodio.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. It's kind of like a Woody the Cowboy type of thing. Hey, howdy, hey.
That's her version of dots and dashes.
Okay. Hey there, hi.
She's
there,
doing
ho
the Morse
there.
Code.
Okay.
You're as welcome as can be.
That's right. And you are welcome to be here listening to this show because okay. This is where we are. Episode 46 of Level 117. We are talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And specifically right now, we're concentrating on Marvel's Agent Carter. Episode 7, Snafu.
Ooh.
Which is an acronym for those of you who don't know. You've been living on the Jersey Shore or under a rock. Snafu, situation normal, all fouled up.
Fudged.
Or something like that. And we're just one episode away from the season finale where it all falls apart. Now, in this particular episode, we had Dr. Ivchenko working his magic with his one ring to control them all, getting inside Dooley's head, Chief Dooley's head.
I don't like him.
Well, you're not supposed to like him,
I just think. I thought I'd say it.
I don't think it's the ring. I think the ring is the focusing agent, but we got that flashback to the the war, and it looks a lot more like
You think he's got a power?
I think he's got a power. Or at least it's the way it's playing is that he's got a power. It's like it's very much like a kind of a telepathy. He's getting in. He's literally getting inside their heads.
But he, that was creepy too. He was, he had the ring in the flashback scene too, right?
Well, he did, but I think
I didn't hear the creepy music stuff then.
It's one ring to control them all. Oh wait, wrong franchise.
It could be the fact that ring just is a focal point for people to look at something because he's actually doing something there.
Well,
and it draws the subject's attention to that, so they miss everything else. It's a guess on my part.
Or maybe it's a focusing for him.
As he messed with it, there was that sound. The sound went right along with that.
That could very well just be a sound effect for.
But when we get the flashbacks, sure we're talking about he's inside the guy's head, and he can see what the guy is seeing, and he can see what Dooley is seeing. So that's.
I think that's
telepathy.
I think there's something there.
He's in there. That's a kind of mind control, and he's in their mind.
Do you think he is?
You know what? I don't know who he is, and I don't think that he...
Couldn't he be somebody new? A new character?
He certainly could be a version of a character that is. I mean, for example, Skye's father on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a very different version of that character than is in the comics.
Mr. Hyde.
So,
spoilers.
With a different origin, with a different... I mean, there's very little in comic aside from, you know...
Name.
Yeah, so it could very easily be... he could become a character in the Marvel universe and not... The connection couldn't be obvious at this point. So
if he's using telepathy, then maybe twisting of the ring is really for him to focus his own mind and
could be.
It
could be a kind of a tool that basically he's using it to increase it, to focus his own abilities or something.
Right, that's what I mean. What I mean is that I don't think it really has anything to do with the other person. I think it's him, his way of focusing his own power and his own mental... His own mental focus.
Very possibly. Now, the rest of the episode, of course, is all about Agent Carter under arrest, being interrogated. And fortunately, we did not go the entire episode with interrogation like I'd hoped last week. I said, if they go past 15, 20 minutes, they've overdone it. And I don't think I wouldn't put in a clock to it, but it felt like that was about it was about 15 minutes, roughly.
And there was other things going on along with the interrogation. So
I like Jarvis showing up and just walking in and confirming what I had asked at the very beginning of the season, you know, whether or not these operators. Knew what they were doing, you know, knew where they were and what, you know, who they were actually working for.
Right.
We knew that Rose, the one on the end, is that her name, Rose?
I think so.
The operator on the end knew what was going on, but there was never any indication that anybody else was doing anything other than just being an operator until tonight.
And whole row of ladies turns.
Yep. I want to see Chief Dooley. What? What did he just say?
So. Well, actually, it was when he mentioned the signed confession that they...
From Stark.
Yes.
That they had the reaction.
Shows up with a briefcase containing what he says is a signed confession from a Howard Stark. And did you see how many pages were laid on the table? That's a heck of a confession.
Yeah.
And of course, there's no signature. There's no signed paper. Because that's part of the deal that Stark shows up later... And Carter and Jarvis are allowed to go. Well, Dooley doesn't take that deal. He wants Stark to deliver the signature first, then he'll let him go.
Actually...
So it kind of backfires on Jarvis, because Jarvis is the one who made it all up.
I don't think it... I think it was signed, but Jarvis had forged his signature.
Mm. No, the signed page out of all of that, according to Jarvis, was still with Stark. So here's the entire confession, but the signature page doesn't come until Stark comes this evening and arrives, and you let us go, and you get the signature that completes the confession. And Dooley didn't go for it. Dooley was like, no, I'm going to keep these two because I've got no reason to let them go, because I have no reason to believe that Stark's actually going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when Peggy looks at Jarvis, Howard didn't write that confession, did he, Mr. Jarvis? No. You wrote that confession, didn't you, Mr. Jarvis? And that whole panic, I panicked and then panicked again. And it was like, oh. Her reaction was just really nice. And then when they lock her up.
Didn't the whole thing actually start with her saying how chivalrous Stark was, much more so than she expected.
Yeah, it surprised her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he's like, sort of scuffing
actually,
the feet, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then we got our obligatory bringing up baby scene.
Yes.
I don't know why they think that Carter and Jarvis are a comedy duo. But it seems like, oh, hey, let's do something funny with the two people with the accents.
Yeah.
Actually, it seemed like they were just making Jarvis the comic relief, and she was just along for the ride.
Well, it's almost like Abbott and Costello.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
Is Jarvis Costello? Jarvis is Costello to Peggy's Abbott?
Possibly.
How many people are going to listen to that? Who's Abbott and Costello?
Who's on first?
I just realized that because I was.
That is sad, really. I just want you to know that.
Well if they ever appeared with Kanye, maybe he can give them a career.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I was up in, when I was living up in St. Joe's, about an hour north of Kansas City, I was involved in a community theater group. We did radio plays. And I was invited to come in and talk to some of the, you know, some of the schools, some of the elementary schools, about radio theater.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm talking about Lone Ranger, Jack Benny, and all these other things. Everybody's like,
blink,
Who?
Blink,
yeah,
blink, blink,
exactly.
Blink, blink.
I'm in the wrong place.
Did you at any point mention get off my lawn?
No.
No.
No. I was not a get off my lawn type at that point.
Oh, okay.
I had to grow into that.
That's been
He also didn't
recent.
Have a lawn at the time. It was.
I really did have a lawn. It was a very nice lawn. I took care of that lawn. But, you know, okay, so the other part of this, we're talking about Dr. Yushchenko getting into Dooley's head to get this item. Apparently, the item is not Captain America's blood, like everybody thought it would be. It is a device.
Or
gas. We think. It's some sort of a some sort of a gas.
Well, I don't know that we necessarily thought it was going to be, because we actually...
Everybody in the SSR
Peggy thought it
right.
was.
Yeah, they were after the bullet.
But the thing was that gas really item 17, or was that a distraction?
I think it's item 17. Because you mentioned when Evchenko comes out of the office and Dottie picks him up and she's like, "We've been compromised. We need to move to the next phase." He's like, "No, we gotta test it first." So there's the test in the movie theater where they release the gas. It causes all of the moviegoers to turn on each other and kill each other in rather violent manner.
Yes.
And that's the end of the episode. It's like everybody's dead, which is exactly what happened in Finno. The Russians all killed each other.
Right. So whatever it is that Stark pulled out of there way back when.
Do we think it's a Stark invention, or did Stark find it and retrieve it?
I think Stark found something.
Might have modified it.
And yeah, he may have tried to work with it, apply the science, and was not happy with what he accomplished. Which seems to be the case with several of his inventions here.
Hence, being in the vault.
Things that didn't quite work.
At least on his plan.
You know, outside of Captain America's blood, was there anything in that vault, in that collection of items,
that actually works the way it's supposed to?
Yeah.
Probably not.
That's the question. Could that have been all of the rejects?
Well, I think that's why they're in the vault.
But
I think
locks them up so nobody can mess with them.
Those particular items are in there because
they don't work well and they're dangerous.
Like the vest that Dooley ends up wearing, which is supposed to be an armor. How is it armor if it's just a vest? It's heat seeking.
It's supposed to keep them. It was supposed to keep a soldier warm, even in like Siberia, but.
Okay,
and also be a kind of armor. It's basically a self warming bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Howard Stark. He's got new materials,
but of course it doesn't work either.
No.
Right.
Because it
Once
heats
you're
up
in,
to the point
you can't
where,
get out.
Yeah.
Goes boom.
And then it heats up and explodes. Which
slight design flaw.
Gives us our Whedon death.
Yeah, it also gives us a really, really poor testing protocol for Howard Stark, because really, this is the kind of thing you really should have figured out well before you get to prototype. I mean, just because your various pieces have to be applied and stuck together.
Yeah.
Stark is either a... Well, he's kind of an... He's kind of all of those things
that you were, well, were tripping on your tongue.
He's kind of the absent-minded inventor.
Yeah, the problem is
he'll put it all together and it doesn't.
Yeah, but the problem is at this point he should know better. You know, I mean we're past World War II, and he was allowed to, you know, when the government's going to give you all kinds, you're at war, they're going to give you all kinds of, is it going to go boom? Go play. But
right.
But it's like, you know, I don't know. There's a very curious sense of humor that runs through this show that doesn't always work for me.
And when you say sense of humor, it means not necessarily funny.
Right. I think
it's an attempt at
it's the slapstick comedy we get a lot of.
Talking about the table?
Well, I actually kind of liked the table bit. Except oddly enough, it violated the rule of three.
Because
we should have had the third knot through the window.
Well,
no, they did.
The third one, none as, the rule of three, though, the third one is the payoff. The two are the setup, and the third is the payoff, because that's the way Neil Simon wrote it all the time, is that you'd have joke one, joke two,
right.
big payoff, joke three.
And the payoff was they were still attached to the table.
Yeah, well, okay, there's the third gag.
Right.
And basically what this is Dooley locks them up in the interrogation room. Which is probably where they should have been in the first place.
Right,
if you're talking about locking them up.
Yeah, because with the whole amazingly lucky angle that they could see Yachenko being able to doing the Morse code on the windowsill, which nobody else in the entire office could see.
But if you will recall,
I did point out, because you said, why did they leave him in there? Because A, it's all glass and they can keep an eye on him.
Mm-hmm.
But B, I said, rightly so, I said, if they lock her up, he probably knows, if they lock them up, left to their own devices, they'd figure out a way to get out. And what did she do? She and Jarvis pick up the table and smash through the window, the mirror. Of course, they're still attached to the table at that point. But,
right, but you know, if they put them in the interrogation room, they probably would have put agents in the other room with guns. So when they crash through the glass window, they would have, they'd be facing a bunch of guys with guns because that's what you do, as opposed to putting them in the, well, you know, very, very open, very...
But what are they going to do if they got a bunch of agents able to see them? I mean, you really can't. They all they can do is sit there.
You know what?
They can't escape.
Well, but
they're sitting there.
But last time,
and at that point, the only thing they're doing is they're holding
our
them.
Our two heroes are in the one location in the entire office. Only our two heroes are in the entire one location in the entire office
where they can see
They can see the villain doing the villain thing.
Well, keep in mind, the last time they left an agent alone watching somebody, he walked out in front of a truck.
But they aren't connecting these two things yet.
No, that's true. That's right.
So they're not going to put this. So I mean, it's just one of the. It's
every episode has to have a hand of the writer moment. And I think that was it.
At least
yeah,
one.
There's and that's unfortunate, but it's true. This show
that is one of them in this episode.
Yeah.
What's another one?
Well, another one would be the way that Dooley dies, because you thought of at least two different ways that they could have solved the problem with the vest.
Well, my thing with Dooley, and we can talk about this a little bit after the break, is he didn't have to die.
Right.
That was a Whedon death just for the effect of a character that we've got some, not very much, but some investment in now, dying. Why?
Well, he also got the big, you know, I want you to avenge me speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Promise me, Carter. Promise me you'll avenge me, Carter.
Say it.
For the love of God, don't let my death be in vain.
Yes.
As I throw myself out a window and potentially blow out the floor below us
and of course,
kill hundreds of people.
And Carter gets to go, Carter!
Exactly.
All right. And he had to shoot the window open. They couldn't just open the window and let him jump through.
Well, you know, it is glass.
No. Those weren't the kind of windows that opened
up. Hang on.
Actually,
it is glass.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, we will get into more analysis right after the break. You are listening to Level 1187 on Sci-Fi Premier.
Use the words, man.
Level 1187 on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Very nice.
Here we go.
Our transmitters are made from hand-wavium. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker of Sci-Fi for Me here, just to give you a little reminder that our super smart crew members share their thoughts weekly on the DC shows Gotham, The Flash, and Arrow. Check out our podcast where we discuss these shows and story arcs, character development, plot twists, misses, and wins. Or if you'd rather check in for a quick recap read, we have you covered there as well. So join us for some DC-flavored morsels at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Jason Hunt here, inviting you to join me and Timothy Harvey as we engage in polite conversation about random topics throughout the genre. Now, you never know just what we'll talk about next, and you can bet whatever it is, we'll have an opinion. And we're usually right, and we're sometimes brilliant. H2O, just one of the many podcasts as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, which you can find on iTunes, Double Twist, OneCast, or the RSS feed over at scififorme.com. Your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
And now, back to Level 1187, the only 100% Hydra-free podcast on the internet. Hail Hydra.
Back on Level 1187, this is the analysis portion of our show, in which we look at...
Wait a minute, that Agent means that the Carter. First part we were supposed to be talking about the plot.
Well, yeah.
our divisions here between the first and second half of the episode is not really...
Well, it's gotten into a gray area anyway. Yeah.
Here's the thing.
We have
not seriously digressed yet, so we've got that going for us right now.
Yeah, but I just realized when he said that this is supposed to be the analysis, sort of seemed like that's what we did in the first part.
Well, we did get into plot, and we did analysis a little bit.
Analysize.
We did analysize. But I want to talk about Dooley's death first.
Okay.
Because it bothers me.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because it didn't have to. It didn't have to play out the way it played out.
No, it didn't.
You could do the exact same thing.
I still don't really understand how it happened either.
What?
Well, okay, because Dooley and Dr.
Evchenko.
Evchenko.
Yes.
They were at the elevator. And Dooley did not have the vest on at that time.
That's right. Evchenko handed it to him, left him with it, and said, "You know what to do with this." Dooley went back to his office,
and
while he was in his fugue state, thinking that he actually went home, he's actually putting the vest on and activating it.
And then he tells his wife that he let him walk out of the office.
That's right. And he's sitting there going, "I think I should feel angry. I think I should feel this. I think I should feel that."
I don't. Yeah. I just don't care.
And it reminds me of the, that's that Kia commercial. You could do with this.
You could do with that.
Sorry, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. The hamsters.
I've officially just completely gone around a bend now.
Yep.
But Dooley puts his vest on, activates it. He's about to blow up. And everybody's standing around. Jarvis knows a little bit how this thing works. He knows that if you tamper with it, it will accelerate the core heating up, blowing up thingy.
Mm-hmm.
But as we saw, the heating elements start to blink before it blows up. You know, because that's what things that are about to blow up start to do. They,
that's right.
Of course.
You know, it's
they
like
let
the countdown. You know. It's that last warning right before it goes, right?
Kaboomy.
So, in between that time, they had plenty of time to cut it open. Okay, fine. We're going to accelerate the process. We know that's going to happen, but we get it open. We can throw it out the window and it goes boom.
Or...
And Dooley's still alive. It essentially does the exact same thing.
Yes, without his body in it.
Destroying the offices and blowing out the windows and all those other things. Everything is the same, except Dooley's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And not Wash. Mm-hmm. Or you have a laboratory, which probably has some sort of containment unit.
No.
Or a safe.
Our scientists.
Or something.
Our scientists said, "I don't know what to do."
Hand of the writer.
What?
What do you mean? But I don't know what to do.
Somewhere in that building, there's got to be a safe. Or something.
Yeah.
Or
a dungeon.
And if you take the thing, you take the thing what's about to blow it up.
Thing what gonna go boom?
What gonna go boom, and put it in the containment unit, because they gotta have one. Dooley's still alive.
It
still blows up.
I gotta
tell
you.
But Dooley's Wash.
I gotta tell you, I've actually been, this episode and the last episode were the whole... Let's take the mind-controlling Russian guy and let him into every conceivable place that could he could be a
top
danger.
Secret.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I wonder. Okay. You know how when you're reading a comic book,
mm-hmm.
oddly enough, because you know Marvel comics,
yeah.
You make it. You're reading sequential art. You're reading. You're looking at it, and you're processing it in a certain way. Okay. When you adapt a comic to a movie or a television show, you're going to have differences, right?
Right.
Okay. The Watchmen. Okay. Huge thing that you know, unadaptable comic book. They said for
nobody
a really long
time. Nobody could ever make a Watchmen movie.
Nobody could ever make a Watchmen movie. Snyder comes along, and he. There are moments in that film that are lifted directly from the comics.
Oh, yeah.
And there are times when that film is just, that film is about as close as you can possibly get to an adaptation of that, okay? For good or for ill.
And surprisingly enough, Snyder did a fairly good job
right.
with that.
And then we have things like motion comics. Okay, you guys have seen mm-hmm. those, right?
Yep.
Okay. I kind of wonder, I think there are some of the things that really bother me about the writing on this show may actually play a lot better. If I was reading them and looking at them on a comic book page,
No.
Because some of this stuff just seems a little too... You're, when you're actually seeing actors play the parts, you're applying...
Real life to them?
You're applying logic and physics to them and things like that.
As opposed to comic book
that we don't expect in a comic book.
Maybe, because, I mean, you know, I've got this vision in my head of Dooley sitting there going, you know, realizing that he's gonna die. He pulls the gun, tells, you know, we have this scene, it's framed in the, you know, the maybe a half page splash, and mm-hmm. the two of them looking at each other, and he said, "Promise me, I promise." And then you see, you know, maybe the page is broken into four panels, and you see him turn and run, and you get the shot where you're looking down the barrel of the gun as he's firing out the window,
yeah.
And he leaps out, and you get a full page or maybe half a page again, where or maybe it's maybe
no
it's a,
full page is the explosion.
Maybe it's a whole page. Maybe it's a two page, you know, spread two where you spread, the top part is the explosion, the bottom is everybody's faces,
yeah.
And then you just sit there and watch that, and you go, wow. But once you actually have a person jump out of a window
yeah.
and set up the bomb, and you watch all the windows blow out, and you sit there and go, you know, if that bomb had been a little bit more powerful, everybody dies. Whoops.
Yeah.
What happened to the SSR offices? We don't know.
What's all that sloppy
they
stuff
just
in there?
Although,
although
I can see in the heat of the moment, you are surrounded by, if you are wearing a device that's going to explode, you are surrounded by a bunch of people you know will die if it explodes. Take yourself outside and reduce the risk of people dying.
Oh, sure.
You know, there's property damage. But see, I'm still saying there's no reason why Dooley had to die.
Both. He shouldn't, I don't think he needed to die, but also the way that he died was like, you know. Wow! How convenient that
it was a comic book death.
How convenient that explosion managed to not kill anybody.
Mm. Well, it killed Dooley.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very hand of the writer thing that all of a sudden, you know, our character who we introduced two episodes ago, flies back to the States on an incredibly quick flight, which apparently no one spoke to him on the entire time.
Well, he couldn't tip his hand until he got into SSR.
But apparently no one interrogated this person because, you know, the Russians and the Americans were not allies at the end of the war.
No, they weren't.
So, but it's just, I don't know. It's
a Russian. We can trust him.
He was a prisoner.
Well, some people did consider us allies.
Well, we were allies during the war. After the war, we were not.
Yes.
And the idea...
They rescued him from this training camp. That's why they...
Yeah, but he's still a Russian.
I know.
And in that day and age, especially in the 50s, but well, going into the in, into the late 40s
considering
or the
50s, how paranoid the freaking SSR is and how they don't trust... You know, they are completely immediately
yeah,
convinced that everyone is guilty of everything.
That's right.
The fact that they just let this guy in,
I'm playing the devil's advocate here. I think it's totally ludicrous. I said that two episodes ago.
Well,
why'd they take him with them?
I can see bringing him back.
I want to come help you.
I think that it's... We can't pay for another set is why he's in the office. You know,
well,
they don't have any other place to put
they
him.
They could have put him in an conference room or an interrogation room. They had this big, long room full of glass things where everyone apparently can see everything.
Yeah, but he was in there when he compromised Agent Yauch.
Yeah, which, again, what was the point of that?
Well, he found out that Dooley was the only one who could get him what he wanted. And
okay, so why did he kill
him? Why did Yauch have to die?
So that he wouldn't be telling later that he...
Clearly, he doesn't seem to have trouble controlling people.
It was practice.
Clearly, he already knows how to do it.
Maybe
he just enjoys it.
That's the best answer
so
far.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing about it is, though, with Agent Yauch, we didn't have any investment in him. We didn't have any emotional investment in him because we didn't know this guy.
Yeah,
he's a character that shows up in the episode to die. He's a red shirt.
Because, you know, they couldn't have introduced him earlier in the program at all.
No.
Because that would have been...
Maybe somewhere in episodes 2, 3, or 4, which were... No. I don't remember anything happening in this
then
episode.
They
we were too busy.
You know, his name would have been on the call sheet. He would have had to been paid.
He could have been there. We just
even just to be there, he would have had to have been paid. I don't know.
That's why they didn't get a stuntman. They got the actor in front of a truck so they wouldn't have to pay him.
The part of the problem is that I actually liked a lot of this episode. Okay, it's when the show pays off quite a bit, when the show works, it's really good.
Yeah,
and when it's not working, it's really frustrating.
It's noticeably not working.
I think you're right though about that whole scene with Dooley's death. I think if you saw it on page, visually, graphics,
I'm wondering some of it felt kind of maybe
it could have worked really well. The problem is when you mix live action with that, with that story. I don't know. Then you start saying the things that we say in real life, like why or
honestly,
how.
I think the comedy bits might actually work better.
Yeah.
On the page too.
Yeah, they probably would.
Or, you know, so again, you see the two of them. Mm-hmm. You got the still. Basically, they've pulled back the table like this. You know, the table's up in the air. Hey, wait. What?
They set it down.
Exactly, and I don't know.
Well, and. It's not something that we can attribute to amateur, low experience, because Chris Dingus, who wrote this episode, is also one of the executive producers of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It also has been involved in Eastwick, Reaper, Medium.
Hmm.
He's done a lot of genre stuff. Men in Trees, not genre, but and has written a number of episodes for all of the shows that he's been a producer on. So it's not a first timer thing. It's point A to point B, get there from here.
Yeah,
thing.
And I think part of the problem is that this is the second to the last episode, and they've got a lot of story to tie up.
But I think one of the things that I did like, and it actually kind of plays into some of the stuff that we've talked about on this show, is when Peggy sits there and says, okay, I'm going to actually confess for real.
Mm-hmm.
And they sit down in the conference room, and she's got all three of the guys lined up there on the table, and she's telling them everything that's been going on for real.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting there going, wait a minute.
How?
You're telling us that you've been conducting this investigation all on your own, and we never knew? How did you do it?
I really liked that scene.
That was my favorite.
A good scene, because when she looks at him and goes, you only saw me for the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And you only saw me as, you know, the girl Friday, whatever. And
if I didn't have a file of coffee or your lunch in hand, you didn't notice me.
Which is exactly what we've been talking about this whole time the show has been doing this, has overdone it.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see that scene. And it's like Tim and I have talked about on H2O. When we get Batman 5 Superman, if there's not that scene where Kal-El sits there and goes, you don't think I know what I did?
Oh,
the humanity. We don't get that scene, then the entire movie is junked.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because you have to have those moments where
there's got to be a payoff.
Yeah,
the validation,
But that scene, I think that scene works best out of all of the things what we saw in this hour.
And it was really well written, too.
Yeah.
Because what she said was spot on.
It was. And it's nice to see that the guys are sitting there and they realize.
Yep.
I guess you're right. Because Dooley comes around right before he dies.
Mm-hmm.
Thompson comes around after they smash the mirror. Because Dooley's locked them up in there.
Yeah.
Right.
And Thompson comes back after now.
And broken off the key.
And now Thompson comes in after Dottie gets away. Because he knows something's up now. Something is not right.
Right.
And, you know, we have that scene between him and Sousa in the elevator. Do you believe her? Yeah, I do. I do too. So they know something's not kosher. So when Thompson comes back in after they smash the mirror, he's going to be more inclined to believe that Carter's been telling the truth this whole time.
Right.
And Howard Stark is not guilty of treason.
Right.
And we still have that element left to pay off in the next episode.
Good thing we have all this stuff to cram into the last 42 minutes of the...
Well, what's left? We've got Howard Stark. We have the weapon. We have to catch Dottie.
Item number 17.
We have to catch Ivchenko.
Uh-huh.
They're going to die.
All together.
Well, we don't necessarily have to cut it. Well, no, because it's the season finale. The assumption is we'll get another 8-episode season next year.
Oh, that's right. So Dottie will probably
Leviathan
get away.
Leviathan could still be out.
Well, Dottie will get away. She could still be for next season. But I'm really hoping the Doctor bites it.
I think we're going to get a really good fight scene between Dottie and Peggy.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Chenko gets away, Dottie doesn't.
We saw it in the preview that we're getting the fight scene between the two of them.
Yeah. I think Dottie gets caught. If Chenko gets away, do you think Dottie dies or Dottie just gets captured? Because that's how we find out about the Red Room.
They capture her. They turn her. She becomes one of the new... Wait, no.
No.
They lure her
with
cookies.
She becomes the first Black Widow. Wait, hang on.
They lure her over with cookies.
Now, the dark side has cookies.
Dark side has cookies.
the good side has donuts on Thursdays.
Oh, is that what it is?
I thought it was angel food cake.
And that's why evil always wins.
Good night, folks. That's right.
Because they've got cookies.
Basement cat has cookies.
Basement cookies. Cat has cookies.
Basement cat has cookies. So we've got Dottie and Evchenko to deal with. We've got the device that causes the madness.
The gas of some kind.
Yes, the don't make me angry gas.
The murder gas.
And Howard Stark being cleared of charges. What else is there left to wrap up for the season?
Meet Mrs. Jarvis.
We're not going to see Mrs. Jarvis.
Probably not.
That's a lot to cram into 42 minutes.
The beginning of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay, so maybe not Mrs. Jarvis.
I don't think we're going to get the beginning of S.H.I.E.L.D. on this either.
Probably not. Not enough time.
Well, because we've already had the beginning of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the one shot. I don't think they're going to revisit that unless and until they're toward the end of Agent Carter,
whatever that is.
Because they're in a completely different facility.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Whitford is nowhere to be found yet. So either they bring him back, maybe they bring him back for season two, and he becomes the new director of SSR, because he's the one in charge when Peggy goes off on her own little thing in the one shot. And at the end of the one shot is when Howard calls her and says, "We're setting up this new thing called S.H.I.E.L.D. I want you to be in charge of it." You know? And that's the beginning of that.
Just like that too.
Exactly.
It's very strange.
I have studied Dominic Cooper and his performance. I don't know that you can't do it in 42 minutes.
I'm just saying that it's going to feel, to right now, it feels like we squandered 3 episodes at the front end of the season.
Yeah. We did.
And that we're coming into this finale with the potential of having
a lot of loose ends.
Feeling very overstuffed.
Unless they leave some of those loose ends loose.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they will lose some loose ends loose, but at the same time... Said it, didn't I? At the same time,
like blowing glue.
You still need to have a.
Nobody's gonna get that.
Nobody's gonna get that. You still need to have a resolution, because you know what? You might not get a second season, Constantine.
jury's still out on that. We don't know.
I know, but you can't.
You can't count on a.
You
second
can't
season.
Count on a second season.
Although
even though it is Marvel.
Yeah,
but.
it's Marvel. It's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's Agent Carter. It's pretty much uncancelable.
Okay, you have to explain the blowing glue.
Well,
okay,
the thing about Agent Carter is it's not the glue that holds the universe together like a S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, but like I've said before, there's a political component.
Mm-hmm.
To Agent Carter, a socio-political component in that she is the female lead. It's the female lead show, and it cannot fail. It cannot be allowed to fail. You know, ratings don't matter. We're not going to cancel this show because it's the only thing that we've got with a female lead. And if we cancel it, then there's going to be all sorts of hell to pay because the show with the woman doesn't work, and you're going to get all this blowback from the feminist group saying. You can't. Don't tell me I'm wrong.
Well,
I'm not wrong.
What I'm saying,
because you know that would happen. Because the Mary Sue would be all over that.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to have to look at their reviews because right now, we're not the only people who are looking at the show and finding flaws with it. And it doesn't matter if you've got a good female lead. If you're getting a good female lead in a show that's wildly uneven when it comes to the writing, you're still going to sit there and go, you know, sure would have been nice if they'd actually written Agent Carter to be consistent. And so we got what we wanted out of a female-led show.
Right.
But if they don't write it consistently and they cancel the show, which they're not going to do because it's Marvel, same reason they didn't cancel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. even though we spent half a season with terrible scripts.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. Yeah. I know so, we're not going to get it canceled.
But the thing is that if it doesn't come back for a second season, you know what's going to happen? Nothing. It's going to be a big, nobody cares. Because you know why? It's a mid-season replacement. It's a mini-series.
It's not even a female lead show.
But the thing,
and that changes the dynamic of everything involved.
Well, no, but except for the fact it's got to be well-written. And half
except,
of the,
except it doesn't. Except we've even ha- we've seen now it doesn't have to be.
Half of the show. But that's it. To come back?
It still doesn't have to be well-written.
I don't think you would get the outcry. That if it was a really well-written show, if we didn't have three episodes that were basically spinning our wheels at the very beginning of the show, which I'm pretty sure helped hemorrhage viewers, just like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
yes.
Which makes you really wonder why they don't have this stuff mapped out before. It says Marvel. Yeah. You know, both shows had displayed a really, really, you know, we're out the gate with an interesting first episode, and then we don't know what to do for half the season before we come back.
Although, to be fair to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there was a lot of stuff that they could not do until Captain America came out.
And yet, strangely...
They could have done something else that was interesting.
They could have started the show after Captain America came out.
Well, they could have done that, too.
That could have happened as well. But, because there was only the one storylines they could have told, because the Marvel Universe is a very narrow place.
Yeah.
Where
that's my point. Like, there isn't something else that they could have spent those episodes doing that was actually interesting instead of just sort of hemming and hawing and spinning them around in circles.
So while I think that if Agent Carter was everything that we all wanted this show to be.
Yeah.
Because we all wanted this. We wanted this show to be really well written.
Had high expectations.
We wanted it to be a really cool 1940s clothes, 1940s cars, post World War II. We wanted the social commentary.
And I wanted a smart woman.
Smart female character.
Well,
but home not from a, the war.
But not making her smart because everybody else is dumb.
Yeah, but I think too, the other thing, I mean, my own personal expectation. Not necessarily of the show, but I wanted to see Agent Peggy Carter that was in Captain America, the First Avenger. Mm-hmm. And she hasn't been in this show. Not very much. She has shown up occasionally.
Yeah.
But that's not the Peggy Carter that I was expecting to see, that I was hoping to see.
Yeah.
And that could be true for a lot of people. It's like, well, wait a minute. This is not quite, and granted, okay, the war's over, she's a civilian, okay, fine, I get that, but in terms of personality and attitude and how she's reacting to everything else, it just something about it just a little bit off until you put her in an action sequence or give her a gun or give her a fight sequence, and that's Peggy Carter that we saw in the movie.
Or give her the right people around her, like the Howling Commandos.
Yeah. Well, it's the same kind of thing. You put a gun in her hand. And put her in a situation where she's Peggy Carter, major Peggy Carter from the movie, and she wasn't in this show.
I think the unfortunate thing is that we could have had what... And of course, it's 2020 hindsight. It's outside criticism, et cetera, et cetera. We know how hard it is to write things.
Yeah.
Okay. In all fairness, you know, we are being critics, and you know what they say about critics? A lot of things.
It's the same thing as teachers.
they use a little more colorful language often when describing critics.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that we could have gotten several of the things that they were trying to deal with in this series, with the very real fact that Peggy Carter was coming to and certainly in England as well, but coming to the United States, where women were 1 minute a vital part of the war effort,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden
not
get back to the kitchen,
yeah.
And the dynamics and all that stuff and the potential of not being taken seriously. But you know what? We could have spent the first three episodes with her proving herself over and over and over again. Why did Peggy let all of these people walk all over her for the first half of this show?
And that's the question.
And
that's the big question.
And we get the scene in the episode tonight where she sits there and confronts them all.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that scene in the second to last episode of the show?
Yeah.
I think that she allowed them to walk all over, as you say, because it was to her benefit a lot of the times, because that allowed her to work without them seeing her.
But before any of this started, before Stark showed up, before any of this started, she came. She fought alongside Captain America. She was
on the front lines.
She's on the front lines. She has got her file is reading like James Bond in heels, and everybody just acts like, I don't know, it's just, she should have, we could have had a really cool dynamic situation where somebody from the outside comes in and wants to treat her like that. And the SSR people who know who she is and know what she's done sits there and goes, oh boy.
See, and that's, and that's one of the fundamental problems with the show is the fact that everybody that's in the SSR seems to be completely unaware of her war record.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is a problem because, A, if you're in a secret government agency like the FBI or the CIA or the NSA or whoever, the people you work with, unless you are blacker than black shadow ops that nobody even knows who you are, the people around you are probably going to know a little bit about your history.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to know your record. Even if they don't, your boss will.
Mm-hmm. But not in this case.
And Dooley didn't even seem to realize. I mean, yes, we got a couple of scenes where he mentioned, yeah, you were big hot stuff in the war. Well, okay, she was big hot stuff in the war. You should use her.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Don't make her go for coffee when you know her record.
Don't
and
you
that,
suspect,
that was the big problem for me.
Don't
for
you
the,
suspect
most
she's
of the show.
Got a lot of medals, actually?
I would expect
World War II, it was a fairly...
But they're British medals.
Most people noticed that World War II happened. And it was a very public thing. You know, it was... Yeah, there was people were aware that it was going on.
Yeah,
and the military has a tendency to, when you come home,
make
a big deal of it. And when you do the kind of things that,
and they even talked about that when they talked about when Sousa came home.
Right,
Sousa even talked. I mean, that's even in the show where they talked about what kind of reception Sousa got when he came home. Mm-hmm. Granted, he was wounded, and they made it all about his crutch and his prosthetic leg, but there's still an acknowledgement there that when our boys came home, there was some kind of recognition for a lot of them. And you're right. I think Peggy's probably got a whole shelf full of medals, and we've never seen them.
And she
should have them out.
Well, some probably like the seals. A lot of those medals she can't even acknowledge she has.
Well, that's a possibility.
And you know what? She probably doesn't even care.
It's
a vanity thing.
It's like, you know, it's like she's like a lot of vets. It's like, well, they gave it to me. Thank you very much. It's in the box.
She probably gave it to her parents.
But why? I mean, there's
well, see, in the scene where we could have seen that is when Dottie's going through her room,
right?
And you open the drawer, and next to the photographs and the secret files is her little box of medals. Mm-hmm. It's just tossed.
50% of this show is really, really good.
You're just going to go with 50.
I'm going to go with 50% of the show. Well, we had three episodes that I could cut out. I could cut out 2, 3, and 4 and not miss them on this show.
Yeah.
If I'm losing a third of the show.
That's not 50%.
With everything else we're running into, I think we can hit 50%.
Yeah.
And it's a good cast. When it's right, it's really, really good. We had some really good stuff tonight. But it's really frustrating because this show... I had more expectations for this show than I had for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You mean the show as a whole? Because they've had time to learn from their mistakes on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, yeah, not only that, but it's a contained storyline. Yeah. I mean, because the thing is, you don't know.
you don't know that you're going to get a second season. They may sit there and decide, you know what, we told all the whole story in one season. We don't really got a second season in us. Nobody does that. But, you know, it could have happened, right?
I don't know. Straczynski did it with Babylon 5. 5 years and I'm done.
Well, but it's...
He had it all planned out the entire 5 years.
But this six-episode, eight-episode thing, this is a very British model, which they do all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, they sit there and go, no, I've only had six episodes to tell my story, and I don't have a second season, guys. I didn't want to tell one. So for all we know, you know, and then next season could be a different character. You know, you could have these different things, right?
Yeah. Or it could be a different decade.
Exactly. So there's different things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's you would think, I don't know, maybe the show works better if you binge watch it.
I want to see.
I don't know.
I want to see an Agent Carter set in the 70s. With a cameo from Linda Carter.
Oh, wow.
Just cause. It just came to my head. I just want to see that now. Make it happen, Marvel. That's what I want to see. I want to see it. Cause,
you do realize it's a different company.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't care.
Different universe.
I'm just saying.
When you consider that DC Comics has just done two different shout-outs to Marvel in the last 2 weeks, one on Flash, one on Gotham, anything's possible.
Well, there's that.
And then one of these days, we're going to get an amalgam movie.
Ooh, that would be wild.
You just keep telling yourself
Dark
that.
Dark Claw.
Delusional. Boy.
Dark Claw versus Super Soldier. Dawn of Justice.
Oh, man.
Half the people in our audience have no idea what we're talking about.
Marvel had enough time hard enough time working with Sony to get Spider-Man. You really think can get them to work with Warner Brothers?
You know, I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I'm gonna sit here and I'm gonna say Marvel probably didn't have as much problem doing that as we might think.
After the Sony
The whole thing with the hack, and we talked about this on H2O. After the Sony hack thing, after Amy Pascal. All that stuff with their emails and everything and whatnot. I think Sony, parent company Sony in Tokyo. Now remember, this is a Japanese owned company. Honor and the whole know thing. That's a huge thing. You know, face saving. Okay, she's got to fall on her sword. Amy Pascal does. How do we save the deal? How do we keep going with this and maintain our franchise rights and not, because we've got, you know, Sony's got egg on their face right now. I think Marvel was in a much stronger position than Sony would have been. If none of this had happened with the hack, we wouldn't have this deal.
But that would make it just almost pure luck that it just happened to go in their favor. And then to work with Warner Brothers
maybe.
All of a sudden. Go around and work with Warner Brothers on that, you know, for an amalgam.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, it's not ever likely we're going to get an amalgam.
Exactly.
I saw something that wasn't, is it the 30-year anniversary of Amalgam? I saw something.
No,
it'd only be like 20 years.
No.
20 years. I saw something on the internet floating around the other day on social media, something talking about amalgam stuff. I was like, why is that showing up now? And I didn't follow up, but I think we're on the 20 years.
We're coming up on 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years.
But God, no. Yeah, 30 years. Well, no, I was not 15.
No, 30 years. 30 years was Crisis.
Yeah, I know. Yes.
And that's enough to make you feel old right there. Good night. All right, so next week we have
the finale.
The season finale. And
they're finale.
No, they're billing it as the season finale. Okay. So the assumption is that we're going to get another season. Mm-hmm. And I would even hedge to say that ABC and Marvel already know that there's going to be a second season, even though they haven't announced it. Because ABC never does the announcements until May.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the problems that they've run into with actor availability, because the actors want to know. They want to know because they get offers for other jobs and stuff. But I think we're going to get a second season.
Okay.
I think the odds are pretty good, just because.
Because how are they going to tie all this up in 40, how many minutes? 40?
Well, you know, they can do a whole bunch of those little, the one-shot kind of deals.
I just what's going to end up happening is just like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they'll come back with a second season, and the second season will have about 75% less of the problems of the first season. And it'll still trip over from time to time because every show does. But we've burned through all the things that just make you want to reach through and grab the writers and say, "We get the point already."
Stop.
And you think Thompson is Mr. Agent Carter, not Sousa.
I think there is a better than 50% chance.
Because we know it's not Dooley.
It's the ghost of Dooley.
Oh, good luck at that.
Ghost Dooley.
No.
Part of his entrails hits the ground, and they use that to clone him.
Sousa has been consistently painted as being the good man. He's also kind of bland in a way that, I mean, I like him. I like the actor. I think I like the character. But in many ways, he's been kind of painted as being the, you know, just the ordinary guy who's just kind of, you know, his biggest defining characteristics is that he's wounded in the war and he's really nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He also kind of has a thing for Peggy, though.
He does. Yeah, he does. He does have something of a crush on her. But Thompson is the broken character.
I don't know. I think both men are broken.
Well, Sousa came back
physically broken.
No, but I think there's other things about him emotionally that are broken as well.
I think Thompson a lot more.
Hmm.
Yeah, because Thompson's been carrying around this burden of the lie.
Yes.
And she helped relieve him of that burden.
Yeah.
And she has consistently proven herself to be better, smarter, stronger, faster.
No, wait. It was, you know, when the ear.
Yeah.
So far, they haven't rebuilt them. I don't think they have the technology.
Not yet.
No one asked Howard. Of course, considering how well his zip-up fleece is going.
Well, it does keep you warm.
Yeah.
Well, and
all the way to the end.
I also think next episode we're going to get a scene where Howard recognizes Dottie, and we're going to get the payoff from the picture in the boat. I think she was the girl in the boat.
Maybe.
I don't think she's going to die. I think she'll be around for season two, Dottie. She's going to be like the arch nemesis.
Could be.
Continue on.
Maybe.
Could be.
She's good.
Well, and really, though, if they do keep her, it's a good opportunity to lead into the whole Red Room Black Widow thing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And expand on that.
Well, you can cite, because here basically you're dealing with post-World War II, post-Nazis, still doing that stuff. You can in the next one, you can work your way into the Cold War and the Red Room and have really focus on the Russian and American conflict in a way that we're kind of getting the beginnings of here with Leviathan, but still we're still pulling from.
But we also still obviously fully trust
the Hydra,
the Russian
I
guy.
Wonder if Bridget Regan. I wonder if Bridget Regan is going to show up in Age of Ultron. I think we've talked about this before, the Black Widow flashbacks. They age her. They put her in the ballet.
Possibly.
I think that's going to be a tie. Because we know that Peggy Carter is going to be in Age of Ultron. We know that most of the characters are having some kind of visions, besides the character Vision. But everybody's going to have something because we've seen that. I think Scarlet Witch triggers all of this. But I think it would be interesting to see if Dottie is the matron, trainer, older mentor type of person for Natasha Romanoff. And maybe sees something, maybe recruits her from the ballet class. Maybe the ballet class is the first point of
recruitment.
Hey, this kid's actually got some skills that could be useful.
Hmm.
And she's an orphan and
nobody
stuff.
Would miss her.
Anybody who can plie like that must be able to kill people.
That's right. That's right. I think that might be that. That's my prediction. We'll see. That's my theory.
Okay.
So that kind of dovetails off of Maya's theory. Dottie's going to survive, and she'll escape.
And just do, because I think we've seen a lot of her skills in ways that we haven't seen from anybody else, and I think she would be a prime candidate as a character to continue.
Perfectly happy to have her stick around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plus, that gives you another strong female character.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who's a villain.
Yep.
Which
so you have
we don't have a whole lot of.
The good girl and the bad girl.
Fight to the death.
It's like Genie and Genie. Or Samantha and Sabrina.
You are really, really dating yourself.
Yeah.
We know exactly what you're talking about, but that's not the point. The point is
that scary?
You said it out loud. So...
Samantha and Serena.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note...
Yes, on that note.
Read from your card.
Oh, yeah. I'll read from the card tonight. Oh,
there you go.
Here it is.
You already did that. You smacked it good.
There. All right. So, that is going to do it for us tonight. Thanks very much for listening, folks. If you have a theory... Or if you have a comment, you can certainly leave a comment on the post, or you can send us an email, level1187@scififorme.com. Our podcasts are available if you would like to subscribe. They are on iTunes. We've also got the RSS feed over on our main site, but you can, if you've got an Android device, Double Twist, OneCast, Stitcher, and social media. We're on all of the social, well, most of the social media. Facebook, Instagram,
Twitter.
The ones
that count.
The ones that count. Tumblr, Pinterest, that doesn't count, but we're on there anyway. YouTube, Google+, YouTube is Sci-Fi for Me TV. We have our recaps of 12 Monkeys. We have Week in Review, which is our weekly digest of all the week's headlines and news from all sorts of stuff, comic book news and the video game news and the science and technology news and all the Star Wars news and everything else that's happened in the week. You can find it all wrapped up in a nice little bow in Week in Review. Our other podcasts, of course, you can listen to in the Sci-Fi for Me Radio tab on our main site. There's Sci-Fi for Chicks. There's H2O, which is Mr. Harvey and I talking about various different subjects every week. The Sci-Fi for Chicks concentrating right now on Gotham and Sleepy Hollow. And we also got the Rogues Gallery talking about the DC Comics stuff. And the Echo Chamber, which is everybody talking about everything. And we are going to be back next week for the finale, the season finale, bum, 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 of Agent Carter. And that's going to do it for us. Maya Aides.
Night, y'all.
Tim Harvey.
Good night.
Dan Hanley.
Good night.
And on behalf of everybody here at Sci-Fi for Me, I'm Jason Hunt. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.